There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, that's right, folks. We had to start the show off a little special this evening, as it is my co-host and producer's birthday. Mr. Tim Dennis has turned 20 for the 17th time today.
I know. Feels so good.
Congratulations, Tim. Happy birthday. Thank you all for all the great birthday wishes you've been posting to Tim over at MySpace and for the emails. It's a pleasure seeing all the outpouring of love come in from my good friend Timmy D.
I know. I'm overwhelmed.
Now, we've got a great show for all of you that have asked me to get more in-depth with UFO talks and stuff. We're going to get into that in a few minutes. We've got Stanton Friedman is going to be joining us for the first hour, and we've got some great topics we're going to be talking to him about involving UFOs with Roswell and the Betty and Barney Hill UFO experience as well. So if you have any questions that you'd like, you can go into our live chat and just PM Tim or myself with any of the questions that you have, and we'll add them throughout the show. I want to thank everybody that was out at Waverly Hills with us last weekend for the investigation. Had a great time, Tim. I had my first paranormal experience at one of our events.
Hey, now.
Let me get that straight. I've had paranormal experiences before.
Okay.
Seen ghosts, seen UFO, possibly saw Bigfoot. But at our events, I've been nada. I haven't had anything happen except for this time. We went with Rachel from Mars.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds weird. Rachel from the production company Mars.
That was your paranormal experience. Yes. You went on an investigation with someone from Mars.
That's right. She told me that she had just heard footsteps in the death tunnel. I said, well, let's go to the death tunnel. So the two of us marched off, and we got in about halfway, and I turned off my flashlight, so we weren't in there more than a minute. And sure enough, I heard thump, thump, thump. Somebody started walking up the stairs of the death tunnel towards us. Flipped on my flashlight, nobody there. Then at the end of the night, as I went all the way down to the death tunnel to make sure everybody was out of there, which let me tell you, that's a hell of a walk in, you know, 100% humidity, 450 feet straight up. It's like walking 45 stories, I guess, is what they kept saying there. But I got about, again, halfway up, and I heard what sounded like footsteps behind me. I thought maybe they were just the echo of my own footsteps, but I stopped, and I clearly heard behind me. No
in the
CDs.
CD tray falling?
No, but you could hear three footsteps that followed me right after. We had shadow people were being seen left and right at the event, darting in and out of hallways. One came within 10 feet, 12 feet of Chad Kalick and his group that were investigating the one night.
Really?
Yeah. And actually, my mom and aunt got to come on one of the events with us here at Waverly. Adam Bly, the demonologist, along with John Zaffis, took him to the cafeteria where they all stood outside, I guess about 15 people, 20 people in one group, could hear somebody pacing back and forth inside the room, and there was nothing there to the visible eye. So Waverly...
Are you sure that wasn't the guy selling hot dogs wondering when are you going to come over and buy one?
No, there was nobody there for that. But it was a great event, a lot of fun. It was hot, but we had a great time, good group of people. For the Stanley event and Queen Mary event, folks, we are almost sold out. As a matter of fact, the Stanley is near capacity sold out in the hotel. We're going to be having to put people over into a different hotel soon because it's selling out so quickly. So if you do have an interest, go to darknessevents.com. We are working, ladies and gentlemen, on a UFO trip, and we are going to be doing it. We're also looking at doing an event in Hawaii where we're going to go do like a five-day event where we'll do a couple days of ghost hunting and 2 days of UFO skywatching. So keep watching Darkness Events as we add these things up there so you can join us and on the line with us for our first guest. We're trying to work a deal here where we can have this gentleman, because anybody that's seen any of the shows on History Channel, Discovery Channel, Learning Channel on UFOs, and knows anything about the history of Roswell recognizes our first guest. Our first guest is Stanton Friedman. Good evening, Mr. Friedman.
Is he there?
Mr. Friedman, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear us? Mr. Friedman, can you hear us?
Hold on. Try him now.
Can you hear us now, Mr. Friedman?
I can hear you now, yes.
Okay, good. There we go. I want to thank you very much for coming on the show with us this evening. We got a lot of really neat things to talk to you about. I just bombarded myself with UFO documentaries over the last 24 hours to, and luckily there was about 20 of them on that all featured you. So I've got a lot of really neat questions I want to go over with you. Plus, I know we're going to have a bunch of the people in the audience that have questions for us. And I want to talk about your book, Captured, The Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience. Now, that is a brand new book that's just out right now. Is that correct?
That's right. Came out in late July. The co-author is Kathleen Martin, who's Betty Hill's niece.
Oh, great.
So now, she had all Betty's tapes. She transcribed them, the hypnosis session. She's got all her correspondence. She was close to Betty for most of Kathleen's life. She was at her mother's when Betty called her the day after the experience. And so it's an insider's story. Now, I got involved because I'd met Betty and Barney way back in 1968. Barney died in 69. I've seen Betty many times since, been in her home. She's in my movie, UFOs Are Real. We've been on the Tom Snyder show together, done a lot of things, on the UFO scene, if you will.
Right.
And so the book has information that hasn't been published before. The first book, The Interrupted Journey by John Fuller, was an excellent book way back in 66, but it couldn't include everything. On the other hand, Kathleen has transcribed all the tapes, and it was clear that Dr. Benjamin Simon, the psychiatrist who did the medical hypnosis on the Hills in separate sessions for months, he would sometimes ask the same question in three or four different ways over a period of time, and depending on the circumstances. So he only got one answer in The Interrupted Journey, which was a bestseller all over the world, and was the basis for the television movie, The UFO Incident, starring James Earl Jones as Barney.
Right.
I was the technical advisor on that. Would you believe that Universal Studios got my name from the United States Air Force of all people? Always thought that was kind of funny. But
Let's start at the beginning with this real quickly. For people that aren't familiar with Betty and Barney Hill, can you give us a little precursor to their story?
They were a couple in New Hampshire, only been married not too long, hadn't had a real honeymoon. They'd each been married before. They'd gone off to Niagara Falls, then up to Montreal, and decided to come all the way back down to Portsmouth, New Hampshire, because a hurricane was coming, and they really didn't want to run into that. And they had a period of about an hour in which they were observing a saucer, a UFO, call it what you want. This is late at night, September 19th, 1961, and over into the 20th. And the saucer would sort of play tag with them. They're out in the boonies of New Hampshire, not many people around at all, 1961. And eventually it turned into an abduction case. But at least initially, there was just a period of missing time, about 2 hours. They got home 2 hours later than they should have. And when they went over this story, it was clear they had no good reason to be late. I mean, there wasn't any traffic in New Hampshire in the middle of the night. They didn't get lost. There weren't a lot of roads. But in going over what they did recall and in discovering some strange spots on the car, which made a compass spin, which nobody has an explanation for yet, Kathleen did see that, incidentally, back in 61. And eventually, with the efforts of a lot of people, they wound up with Dr. Benjamin Simon. This is more than 2 years after the event.
Mm-hmm.
and trying to find out what went on. Betty had some terrible sort of nightmarish dreams about being abducted within 2 weeks of the event. Barney developed ulcers that his doctor finally said, look, Barney, I can't do anything more for you. I think we need a psychiatrist here. And the first one eventually recommended him to Dr. Simon. Now, Simon's great gift is not that he had any interest or knowledge of flying saucers. He didn't. But that he had treated thousands of shell shock war veterans. Today we'd call it post-traumatic stress syndrome, you know.
Right.
You know, your buddy's head gets blown off next to you during the war. Mm-hmm. Some people have trouble getting back to normal after that.
Yeah, no doubt, right.
And so Dr. Simon developed a very deep medical hypnosis technique and was successful with thousands of such people. The Army actually made a film about him, Let There Be Light, showing how he worked with these guys. And he was actually head of a 3,000-bed hospital post-war. So that was his great strength, is being able to extract from people emotionally distressing, I'll put it that way, a lot of other words you could use,
right.
I suppose, experiences. And what came out with both Betty and Barney was that they had apparently been abducted on board a saucer, hadn't gone anywhere, were examined in separate rooms, and eventually put back out and told they wouldn't remember what happened, and didn't. And Kathleen and I were at the actual site, Lincoln, New Hampshire. And when you look at the location, and it's perfectly clear that Barney would not have got off a primary road onto a secondary road, and then off the secondary road onto a dirt road, without some push by the guys upstairs, so to speak. And when you look at the area, it's about the only place around where a good-sized craft could come down, a very heavily forested area. And so the mental control was one thing that stood. I hadn't been at the actual Lincoln site before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of the things that you could understand. Think about a government's viewpoint. Wouldn't every government like to be able to control the behavior of people from a distance, get everybody to drop their guns, for example?
Sure.
You know, that's big concerns. So anyway, the book came out. It was a great success. The movie came out. It received a very good response. And I've learned over the last couple months, a little less than 2 months, since the book has been out, and I've been signing books down in Roswell and at the Mutual UFO Network Symposium in Denver, that for a lot of people, this was their introduction to ufology.
Right.
I should add that there were two articles in Look magazine by Fuller at that time, and that was a very popular magazine, weekly magazine, and this was a lot of people's introduction to ufology. Now, I'd gotten involved well before that, but I hadn't fully appreciated, because I'm an old guy, you know, how younger people might have been influenced by the Interrupted Journey and the Betty and Barney Hill story. So I've been very pleased with the response we've gotten, good reviews, and both Kathleen and I have done signings, and we'll be doing more. And we're pleased. Yeah, there are still people who sometimes give us a hard time. One of the things that I bring to the book, sort of the hard-nosed physicist guy, is the star map that Betty observed on board the craft.
Right, that's what I was going to mention. I mean, this wasn't just your standard abduction story that we've heard 100 times on Coast to Coast, where they just, I was out in a field and a UFO pulled me up and I woke up and my butt hurt and that's all I remember. These people actually saw star maps that they were able to...
Just Betty.
Yeah, relate it back, and they were able to actually see things that we only found out about in the recent years, correct? Some of the stuff that was on that maps.
Yeah, Betty, they're finished with Betty's examination. Barney's mm-hmm. in the other room. And Betty knows who she is. Her family came over about 1635. Her mother lived in the same house all her life. I mean, you know, solid New Englanders. And so she asked this guy, the leader of the crew, where are you from? I know you're not from around here. So he shows her, I'll call it a hologram. We didn't have the word at the time. So
right.
A three-dimensional map with a bunch of points of light, which are supposedly stars,
mm-hmm.
and three different kinds of lines that are supposedly heavy trade routes, light trade routes, and occasional expedition. It's got a three-dimensional field to it, about 2 feet by 2 feet by 3 feet. And Betty's standing looking up at this thing, and she says, "Where are you on the map?" Wise guy alien says, "Do you know where you are on the map?" "No, I don't know anything about astronomy." "Well, how can I tell you where I'm from if you don't know where you're at?" End of discussion.
Now, did they relate? Was it being done telepathically? Were the aliens speaking to them in English? What was being done?
There seemed to be several different levels of communication here. The leaders seemed to speak English with a strange accent. Amongst themselves, they made buzzing, murmuring noises, which didn't mean a darn thing to Betty and Barney.
Right.
On occasion, they seemed to be telepathic, for want of a better phrase. I mean, telepathy is something we don't know a heck of a lot about, and these guys seem to know a great deal about. How do you influence people at a distance without putting a gun to their head or a knife to their throat
right.
or whatever? So the interesting thing is that Dr. Simon, who's kind of bowled over by trade routes, you know, travel,
right.
what is this routine here? He asks Betty if she can remember the map accurately and gives her a post-hypnotic suggestion. If and only if she can remember it accurately, please draw it later on. She goes home, she draws it, brings him into a later session. And it's in the book, The Interrupted Journey. Now, Dr. Simon had final say on everything that went in the book, and I've seen his notes on John Fuller's manuscript, and he wrote rough herd on him.
Right.
You can't say this, you can't say that, that would make me look foolish. You can't, you know, it's probably a better book for it, but I don't know how Fuller put up with it.
Right.
But anyway, it's in the book, and there doesn't seem to be any way to determine what the heck this map means. And I got a call from Carl Lorenzen, who was head of the old Aerial Phenomenon Research Organization, saying that a school teacher who belonged to Mensa, incidentally, was building three-dimensional models to try to recreate what Betty had drawn, looking at it from them from all different directions to see if there was a three-dimensional pattern that matched the two-dimensional drawing. And Marjorie Fish was her name, and she'd gone and visited Betty. And Carl wanted a scientist. Now, I was fairly active in APRO, so she contacted me. I contacted Marjorie. Marjorie sent me a lot of material, and I visited her. I was traveling and lecturing all over the place. I mean, I've only lectured in all 50 states, 9 provinces, and 16 other countries, so I get around.
But who's counting, right?
yeah. And so I visited her, was very impressed with her work, very objective. Was with her in Chicago when we made a presentation to the Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who was the Air Force scientific consultant on Project Blue Book, the old Air Force group. He was an astronomer. And I also spoke out for her at a Mutual UFO Network symposium way back in, like, 72 in Akron, Ohio. And I published the first article about her work. The remarkable thing was that it was only after a new catalog of star distances. That's the hard part here, you see. To aim a telescope, you only need angles.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether it's 20 light years away or 40 light years away. The astronomers aren't going anywhere. But if you want to build a three-dimensional model, you have to know the distances between things.
Right.
When a new catalog came out, she wound up building a total of 26 of these models, incidentally, but it's when the new catalog, the Wilhelm Gliese catalog, came out that she was able to find one and only one pattern that matched angle for angle and line length for line length what Betty drew. And it was a great day for Marjorie, and I published an article in Saga magazine. I'm sure everybody remembers the old Saga magazine.
Sure.
And then I got Terence Dickinson, whom I had met previously, to do an article. He was editor of Astronomy magazine. And he talked to Marjorie and talked to a whole bunch of other people, ran an article that got more response than anything they'd ever run before. He published, I think it was 11 different letters over the next year, and then put out a 32-page full-color booklet, The Zeta Reticuli Incident. That's the names of the base stars. This is the remarkable thing about the work. There's several remarkable things. Nobody doing what Marjorie did back in, say, 1961 or 66 when the book came out could have come up with the correct identities for the stars because the best distance data wasn't available until after 1968. All the stars in the pattern are sun-like stars. Not too hot, not too cold, not too old, not too new, not too close to another star, not varying in their energy output, not very good for life if you alternately freeze and broil.
Right.
And it turns out that all these sun-like stars are in a plane, which is quite remarkable. Think of a big, thin pizza with thin slices of pepperoni, mm-hmm. as opposed to a big, fat loaf of raisin bread with the raisins all over the place. This makes it a lot easier to go between systems, incidentally, and nobody had known that this was true at the time. And it identifies the base stars, the two stars very close to each other with heavy trade routes between them, as Zeta 1 and Zeta 2 Reticuli. That's the constellation of Reticulum, which means the net. Can't see it from here. Got to go below the equator.
Okay.
And this is a remarkable, unique pair of stars. Not only are they both sunlight, now, they're only 39 light years from here, which is just down the street on a galactic level.
Sure.
Well, you know, the next big galaxy over is 2 million light years,
right.
And our own galaxy is 100,000 light years across. So these guys are just down the street. They're only an eighth of a light year apart from each other. Now, think about that for a minute. The next star over from the sun is about 4.3 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are only an eighth of a light year apart from each other. 35 times closer, these two stars, sun-like
right.
stars, than the sun is to the next star over. We're out in the boonies.
Right, exactly.
These guys got next-door neighbors. And in addition, these two stars just happen to be a cool billion years older than the sun. So we might expect that they would know some things we don't know. I mean, look back 100 years.
Right, exactly.
What, and, you know,
what have we learned?
Say where we'll be 100 years from now.
Yeah, what have we learned in just the last 50 years even? Yeah, it's pretty
yes.
amazing. Well, we've got to take
college.
Our first break real quick,
okay.
Mr. Freeman. Let's take that quick break, and we'll come back. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show with our guest Stanton Friedman. We'll be back with more right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
This is Dave Schrader from the Darkness on the Edge of Town radio show. Each week, we delve into the web of the unknown and deal with a lot of scary subjects. But nothing makes my blood run colder or scares me more than dealing with technology. That's why we turned to the experts when we wanted our website for the show set up and maintained. In the studio with me is Don Raleigh, owner of Evolve Systems. Don and his exceptional staff were easy to work with and made setting up our site a breeze. Don, what is it that sets you apart from other web developers?
Well, Dave, we make your business visions come to life by creating, maintaining, and hosting all of your internet needs. We do this by listening to our clients. We offer programs and price plans to fit any budget. And Dave, I mean any budget. Call us at 651-628-4000 and put us to work for you.
Call Don at Evolve Systems, 651-628-4000. I did, and I couldn't be happier with the results.
That's because we take the ugh out of technology, Dave. Call us today at 651-628-4000 or visit us on the web at www.evolve-systems.com. Serving the entire United States. That's Evolve Systems, helping you to manage change. Cheers.
Ew, it stinks in here.
Passing gas. Is there a right time and a wrong time to do it?
Come on, huh? I'm trying to eat.
When indoors in the company of others, passing gas is not only taboo, it can be deadly.
I'm gagging.
Passing gas releases a plume of toxic vapors like ammonia and hydrogen cyanide.
Oh, you're killing us over here.
Every year, hundreds of infants exposed to passed gas die.
What? I cracked a window?
And just opening a window isn't enough. These deadly fumes can linger in the room for hours after odors have dissipated.
Daddy, you promised you'd smoke outside.
You're right, Pumpkin. Excuse me.
If you smoke, take it outside. Don't pass gas. A message from the American Legacy.